It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Lee Rayburn. The governing body of Wisconsin High School Sports has updated its policy on transgender athletes to say that only athletes designated as females at birth can compete in girls' sports.
The Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association, or WIAA, said the decision complies with federal guidance from the Trump administration. An executive order bans athletes assigned male at birth from participating in female sports.
And the WIAA's change aligns with a recent policy decision at the collegiate level by the NCAA.
The state assembly is also considering bills that would put similar rules in state law for high school and college athletes.
We're checking in on how policy changes could affect athletes. Emily Mills is a Madison-based writer and former opinion columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who identifies as transgender. They wrote a column for Civic Media's The Recombobulation area called Trans Rights Are Human Rights. Emily, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start with going through these policy changes from the WIAA and the NCAA. It sounds like transgender athletes will be able to practice with their team but not participate in the competitions?
Yep, that is correct. That is the ruling, which is sort of one of the biggest payoffs of playing a sport is being able to compete. So it's important.
And the change from the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association comes after the Trump administration acting to prohibit transgender women and girls from competing in sports, that is. Why do you think the WIA decided to make this change?
Well, if I could get inside the minds of the board of control, I would be able to have a clear answer for you. But it does feel like complying in advance out of fear and potentially out of something that some of the people on that board or who was influencing it already kind of wanted to have happen. I feel like Trump's executive order is a good pretense and excuse to roll out stuff that's been debated for a while and that maybe they didn't feel like they had the backing to do. But it could also just be out of straight up fear of being targeted with cuts to funding or other support. But it wasn't legally required of them to do this, I think, is the important thing to point out.
And why not?
They are not a federal agency. They're not a government agency, period. They're not even a state agency. The WIAA is a nonprofit that represents a lot of both public and private schools. And it's an opt-in. I mean, they do a lot of work and they support a lot of athletics programs through those schools. So they're an important resource and they're an important sort of governing body. But they are not government. So they are not legally required to make this change.
How would you have liked to have seen the WIAA approach the issue of transgender athletes?
Have conversations with transgender athletes, first and foremost, and the parents and families of these kids. The WIAA does not track how many trans kids are participating in athletics. They don't have any idea of the numbers. It's probably very, very small because us trans people make up a very small percentage of the population, about 1%. So even smaller within athletics. But there was no effort to reach out to trans kids or their families to find out how this might impact them. And as far as I'm aware, they didn't receive any particular complaints about specific individuals or students, just kind of nebulous complaints about general policy. As you know, people are hearing a lot of conversation about trans athletes in sports on the national level at this point, and there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding and fear out there, and it seems like that's what they based the decision on.
What do you see as the misinformation, misunderstanding, and fear?
I think it's understandable for people to have misgivings or concerns or fear about things that they don't understand. And like I said, we're a very small percentage of the population. There's a lot of just lack of information, lack of exposure. And I think that's why I always come back to, like, talk to these kids, talk to their families, find out why sports is important to them, why being able to play on a team that aligns with their gender identity is important to them. And also look at the science. There is actual science now. It's new because this just hasn't been a subject that's been studied a great deal. But there are really good scientific studies, research and surveys about trans participation in sports and how trans bodies, you know, react to different kinds of hormone replacement therapy and other, you know, transition processes and what that does or does not do for your ability to perform in a sport. And, you know, it comes down to, I think a lot of people just assume that trans women, because the misunderstanding is that trans women, they think these are men or these are boys. But trans women and girls are women and girls, and they always have been. And it might take a minute to realize that about yourself and get access to the sort of support you need to live fully in that truth. But then we're talking about things like, you know, the science of biology is complex. It's diverse. Human bodies come in a wide variety of configurations, different hormone levels. And that's true both if you're trans and if you're cisgender. And cisgender just means that you continue to identify with the gender you were assigned at birth. We all have different levels of different kinds of hormones and chemicals in our bodies. There are cisgender women who are by and large the targets of these kinds of sex testing and bans, especially we're talking about like the Olympic level. We've seen this play out.
An Algerian boxer, Amani Khalif, South African runner Caster Semenya. But there's also been, rumors that even Serena Williams, tennis star, has had to refute, and Brittany Griner, the basketball star.
Yes, exactly. You'll notice that many of those are Black women, by the way, who by and large are the main targets of a lot of these pushes to police women's gender and their gender presentation. Some of these women end up having different kinds of hormone levels, and you know, we would call them different conditions or genetic markers. You know, people can have XX or XY or XXY and other kinds of varieties in your chromosomes that sort of impact how you develop. You may never know about it, though. There's plenty of people who never know that they have these differentiations until they're forced to go through these sorts of tests or something else comes up. But I mean, the fact is that, yeah, the majority of the people who've been targeted by these sort of like investigations and accusations that, oh, you have a competitive advantage and you're secretly a man, are cisgender women. And they're being policed because they have bigger muscles, because they're really good at their sports, because they look a certain way, because there's a lot of racism tied up in this, too. We could get into that. It's a much longer conversation. But the fact is, again, biodiversity. Humans have biodiversity. And this is just a completely arbitrary and science, pseudoscience, basically, approach to trying to address the issue.
Emily Mills, what do you see as the consequences of the WIAA's changes in policy?
I mean, first and foremost, it sends such a terrible negative message to just trans kids or gender nonconforming kids who want to be part of teams and play in sports. I'm someone who's been an athlete for many, many years. I've dealt with misgendering and questions about my identity since I was a kid. But sports were so important to me to build a sense of self in my body and my relationship with other people, to build skills, to, you know, feel connection with a community of people who are sort of like me. And that's being taken away from these kids. So I think that first and foremost is the fallout, is you have a lot of kids who just feel like they're being targeted and attacked and singled out for, you know, people who don't even know who they are or what they want to do and how they can contribute and how important this is. I think the other side effect is, how do you enforce something like this? Who do you designate as the people who get to go in and determine which kids are which and who is enough of a girl or enough of a boy and what body parts they have? I mean, we're talking about, are you enabling adults to do genital inspections on kids against their will, like to participate in a sport? Like, there is.
What does policing look like?
What does policing look like? Exactly. And that's, I have a lot of questions, and I think it's really gross when a lot of these people are accusing trans people of being predators, but it's like, hey, look, you're the one who is advocating really invasive procedures on kids to decide who is, you know, fits your particular definition of what a girl or a boy is.
Do you see what the WIAA argument could be in terms of unfair competition? It was the Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom who recently on a podcast with right-wing influencer Charlie Kirk called the trans athletes competing in girls and women's sports, quote, deeply unfair.
I understand where the feeling comes from. We are raised in a society that really encourages a lot of misogyny. And I think fundamentally the idea that there's an unfair advantage across the board between men and women or boys and girls is rooted in misogyny and this sort of misplaced desire that we must protect women and girls from these evil men, which is awful to men, frankly, as well. But it doesn't actually engage with, again, the great variety of body types and other things that give people a competitive advantage. We want to talk about, are you born into an area where you have a lot of money and access to training resources? Are you born with, you know, genetic differences? Like, think of Michael Phelps, the swimmer, who was a genetic anomaly who was made him really good at swimming. And then also, you have to put in the time and the effort to actually get good at sports. I play a full contact sport and I've been playing it for years, roller derby. It has been gender inclusive for many, many years. I've played with and against trans athletes, cis athletes of all genders. I have beaten cisgender men at this game. It does not matter. Every body type has a place on the track. Everybody still has to train and put in the effort. You have advantages in some ways and disadvantages in other ways. And the beauty of sports is trying to figure out what your unique combination of elements can bring to that sport and to that team and how you can develop it and how it works out. And maybe in some places, I was never going to be, let's say, a gymnast. I was just like too tall and I wasn't very flexible. I couldn't do the splits as a kid, you know, like that sucks, but it's just that's how it was. But no one told me, oh, you can't do it because this blanket thing about my gender or how I was born is just sort of you have to figure it out on your own.
We're talking about changes to WIAA and NCAA policy for transgender athletes in competition. Our guest is writer Emily Mills. And Emily, you wrote in your article that attacks on trans people are attacks on the rights of all individuals to make decisions about their own bodies. Can you draw that connection for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Fundamentally, what we're talking about is bodily autonomy, trusting people to make decisions for their own bodies, their own lives, and to tell you the truth about who they are and believe them. I think this is so important for kids, especially. There's too much, I feel like, in our society writing off the wants, the needs, the feelings of children, people under 18, and saying that we get to control exactly who they are and who we think they should be. But kids know. I mean, they might be going through a journey. It might change over time. That's true of adults as well. We should have the freedom to explore that and figure out who we are, how we feel, how we want to show up in the world at any time in our lives. So again, fundamentally, we are talking about the right to make decisions about your own body. And for kids, it's with, you know, the input of their guardians, their doctors as well. And that should be the end of it. And that connects directly, I think, to attacks on bodily autonomy that we're seeing play out in reproductive rights, you know, the rollback of rights to an abortion and to other abortion-related care or just reproduction-related care. We're seeing attacks on all of that up and down the board and just people's right to make decisions about their bodies. So all of that, to me, is extremely connected. And to me, I think picking on trans people felt like it was easy because most people don't know trans people, because there's a lot of misunderstanding and maybe fear around trans people. And so if you can get away, you can get away with like attacking this very marginalized minority group, and that most people won't pitch a fit about it or make that connection. But it's all tied into this larger movement. And it's like if you can get away with that, it's going to roll into other groups and other people are going to be affected because it's all the same issues. It's all the same rights. So if we don't have the right to self-determination and bodily autonomy, they can take it away from anybody.
What would this policy have meant if it were in place when you were growing up?
Well, I wasn't out as trans as a kid, but I was an extremely gender nonconforming child. So I was identifying as a girl, but I was frequently mistaken for a little boy. And even before there were rules like this in place, there were instances where coaches yelled at my coach and said, "How dare you have a little boy on your team? We're not going to play you," and threatened not to play. Now, this was in the 90s, which was not a great time to be a queer, trans, or gender nonconforming kid, but there at least weren't like official policies about it. So the adults could just sort of have a conversation and figure it out, and then I would get to play my game because my coach would go to bat for me. If there had been just a strict rule, that argument could have turned into a demand that I go through some kind of sex testing, very invasive testing of my genetics, an examination of my body, just to prove that I had the right to play on my freaking softball team as a adolescent. So I know that it would have had a direct impact on me because I know that it's having that exact kind of impact on kids now, whether or not they identify as trans or non-binary. And I think that's horrifying. And I'm just so sorry. And that's part of the big reason I speak up is because I want to fight for these kids' rights to not have to deal with that. I dealt with enough in the 90s when I was a kid. And like I said, I can't imagine if it had just been a rule. It would have been awful.
Earlier this month, there was a 10.5-hour hearing in the state assembly about a pair of bills introduced by Republican State Representative Barbara Dietrich of Oconomowoc. She actually reintroduced these bills in the state legislature that would codify transgender athlete policies into state law. And here's a clip of her testimony last week to the assembly committee.
This is not meant to be cruel to anyone. But number one, we want our athletes to have fair competition, a fair shot at it. Women have come too far to be set back and displaced by biological males on their teams. taking the podium, taking their awards, taking their scholarships. And secondly, injury remains a concern.
She also cited a 2023 Marquette Law School poll that found 75% of respondents favored a rule like the one she's proposed. 2025 Pew Research Center poll found the number to be 66% and growing in recent years. How political is all of this?
I mean, they've made it political, which is pretty harsh when it's just, hey, this is who I am and I'm trying to live my life. It's interesting to hear those arguments, though, especially from people who have done little to nothing to actually meaningfully support women's athletics. We talk about making sure that there's equal pay for women, that there are equal resources designated for women's athletics at all levels, that there are meaningful protections against sexual assault in women's sports. We've seen some pretty high-profile cases where that just did not happen, and pretty amazing athletes up and down have been terribly affected by that. So I always get a little bit up in arms when these people make the argument that we're trying to protect women's sports when they haven't really been making any kind of effort for that up until the point it's come to say, oh, well, these particular women and girls we don't like and we got to kick them out because somehow it's making things unfair or unsafe, when there's zero evidence to that fact. There are no cases of trans women or girls harassing or assaulting or causing problems or affecting the pay of women. And when we're talking about the idea of taking away medals or scholarships, that's also just not true. Some of the people they've been parading around who are sort of these professional anti-trans athlete spokespeople, these athletes, these young women athletes have been, you know, it's the same like three people that they bring to all the hearings across the country, haven't lost to trans women. They've lost to other cis women, and there was like a trans woman on the podium somewhere or even lower them in the ranking, and they decided after the fact that they were upset about it. There are very, very, very few, I think maybe one or two instances of a trans woman even coming in first place at like larger, you know, competitive level, and there's certainly no cases of them, quote unquote, stealing scholarships from other people. And the fact of the matter is, if someone trained really hard and won, I think that's fair and square. People get really upset and talk about, oh, well, you know, you have greater bone mass or you have more testosterone. If you're a trans woman who's been on hormone replacement therapy for any length of time, you typically have lower testosterone levels than a cisgender woman. You have a lower bone mass. They've done studies on this where, like, it actually negatively impacts the performance of women who are going through hormone replacement therapy. As when we come to the polling and the sort of this overwhelming majority of people who feel this way, it's because they're being fed this kind of narrative through so much of the media, through so many of these politicians who are repeating these unfounded, sometimes just base lies about what the reality is.
So paint the ideal youth sports environment for us. What would it look like to Emily Mills?
You know, I think there are questions still. I would like there to be more meaningful conversations and better research, like funding for research to figure out like how to do this in a way that works for every kid. But I think, you know, when we're talking about those particulars, but I think fundamentally overall, what I would like to see is the policy they had before was pretty fine for the WIAA and for the NCAA and a number of other places was just, and it's the policy we have at roller derby. You play where you feel the most comfortable and you play on the team according to your self-gender identity.
Emily, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Emily Mills is a Madison-based writer who is with us to discuss their recent column on transgender athletes after the WIAA and NCAA updated policies to limit participation in women's sports to only athletes assigned female at birth.
Coming up, school counselors are celebrated for their data-driven approach to helping students.
It's so worth it. It really made us really dig into our program and make sure that we're providing the best services that we can for our students and that we are doing all the things that we should be doing as school counselors.
That's next on Wisconsin Today.